Welcome to the 20th anniversary edition of the Homelessness Marathon, a national dialogue on homelessness and poverty. Presented in conjunction with the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign, the Poor People's March on Washington, and WPFW, your station for jazz and justice in Washington, D.C. The number to call in is 1-866-LEFT-OUT. That's 866-533-8688. Live video of the broadcast may be found at homelessnessmarathon.org.
My name is Tara Colon, and I'm a formerly homeless mother, formerly homeless youth. I am a Mexican Puerto Rican American that grew up back and forth like a good Puerto Rican from Puerto Rico to the mainland. I'm here representing not only what's going on in Puerto Rico right now with how many deaths there were. My own family was touched by death over the hurricane, but also the international workers. We're also Mexican and all the undocumented folks. The violence of poverty, there's no lack of it. I'm here to eliminate it. I'm not here to perpetuate it. I'm not here to beg for crumbs. I'm here to dismantle a system that is oppressing all of us equally.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the 20th Annual Homelessness Marathon, where the number to call in is 866-LEFT-OUT, which is 665-33-8688. Here in the WPFW studio with me in Washington, D.C., is an arch criminal, Sherry Hunkla, the director of the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign, who just can't seem to stay out of jail for nothing. You were just arrested yesterday, isn't that right?
Sure was. It looks like Ben Carson from Housing and Urban Development didn't want to sit down and have a conversation.
So you were arrested for being outside and demanding to see him? Is that what happened?
Well, not outside. We went inside. We figure we walked all the way from Philadelphia, from a homeless encampment to Washington, D.C., that at least he'd send out the janitor or somebody to talk to us. And instead, I was taken away by Homeland Security.
I have to say, I think you'd have had a better conversation with the janitor. Let me tell you, Sherry, there's only a half of this story about this particular hour of the show that you know, because I haven't had a chance to confer with you. This was an hour that, in a sense, didn't work out. And usually when we have a topic that doesn't work out, we just change what it says. Because this was supposed to be a forum on the question, does the government have the right to sweep homeless camps? And, you know, everybody is always talking about protecting the rights of homeless people, but nobody talks about, well, where does the government get this right in the first place? So I thought we would maybe have a forum and have a discussion about this. And the reason it went off the tracks was, even though homeless camps are taken down every hour pretty much of every day in the United States, I could not find anyone to say that the government has the right to do it. I went through a dozen organizations, of which I can only remember 10. The American Conservative Union, the U.S. Conference of Mayors. Remember, it's the mayors who sick the police on all these 10 cities. The San Francisco Mayor's Office, which knows a little thing about or two of harassing homeless people. But they referred me to the San Francisco Department of Homelessness and Supportive Housing, which didn't return my calls. The D.C. Mayor's Office refused to send anybody. The Federalist Society, the Heritage Foundation, the Washington Times, the National Review, the Washington Examiner. None of them could come up with anybody who would participate and take an opinion and explain why the government has this right. Somebody referred me to the Foundation for Government Accountability, which takes a lot of stands you and I don't agree with, like against Medicaid expansion, and they have a headline on their worksite, go to work or lose food stamps. Even they would not send anybody to explain why the government has the right to take down homeless camps and destroy them. Sherry, your thoughts.
Well, I think that they're really concerned about having a good look, their public relations stance on it. You know, we were just at the Chamber of Commerce this morning, and we wanted to talk to somebody because we know a lot of the businesses are behind having different families that are homeless swept from in front of their stores. And so we wanted to talk to somebody. So you know, I mean, whether it was the park police yesterday or anybody that we encountered, they always say, I hope you understand this is just my job. Well, you know what? During the Warsaw Ghetto, the folks that policed other Jewish folks, they said this was just their job. And there it goes. The list goes on and on.
Never mind them. That's what the Nazis who policed the ghetto said.
That's right. You know,
at least the capos had the excuse that they were going to be killed if they didn't do it.
Well, and then if you look in Philadelphia, right, it was actually when they swept the homeless from underneath the subways, they hired homeless people. To sweep them from
exactly.
underneath.
Exactly. And that was in the Grapes of Wrath, too. When the guy driving the tractor, tractoring out other people, is just a desperate guy. They're not the ones I want to beat up on. It's really the people who put these policies in place.
Exactly.
And I want to say about these organizations refusing to participate, or not refusing, just can't think of anything to say on this topic.
They're refusing.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's polite. You know, I'm just trying to be fair or whatever, you know. The whole conservative movement in the United States is based around the idea that you are protecting the people from the unlawful powers of the government. You don't want big government crushing the little folks. But when the government takes away the very means of survival from people, they got nothing to say. I don't know. That didn't strike me as right.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't believe it. Yesterday, we were out at DuPont Circle, and folks just, you know, we even had a permit to be on the land, but that wasn't good enough. They still swept all the homeless that were around the park there in the park and revoked our permit.
We got a lot to talk about, but we've also got a couple of callers on the line. So let's take a couple of calls here. First, we have Juju from London.
That's right, yeah.
Hi, and welcome back. I know you were on in the previous hour, although we didn't talk. Let me ask you a question, Juju. How did you hear about the broadcast over there in London?
I found it, your radio station, by accident.
Oh, okay.
On the internet.
That's funny. That's how I got here.
Really?
Do you have a question for Sherry or any comment? Well, Sherry is one of the foremost homeless advocates in the United States.
Right.
That and a couple of bucks will get you on a subway, but never mind. We love her anyway. So you got any thoughts or questions you want to share?
No, yes, I have, because I don't know where we left the conversation and if you're aware of what we talked about earlier on.
No, I didn't hear the whole hour. Every now and then I have other things I have to take care of when I'm off the air. So
I understand. I explained the whole story about how I became homeless from being a big businessman. And everything was fine. But have you got a few minutes?
Well, I don't have a ton of time, but tell me, what is it you want to say?
What I wanted to say was that I became homeless due to being a victim of a serious fraud, you know? And I ended up in hospital having a nervous breakdown. Mm. And unfortunately, the hospital, the government, and no one helped me, and they released me. I ended up on a bench in a hospital, you know, in the gardens. They discharged me.
Uh-huh.
But luckily that and a pastor from a church was doing a homeless count. He found me. I explained the story to him, what has happened to me. He took me underneath his wing. And he took me to a homeless shelter and helped me out a lot, you know.
Well, I'm glad for you. Let me grab Sherry in here. Sherry, have you heard stories in the United States of people being with mental illness, physical illness, anything, released to the streets?
Yeah.
You know, I just want to share this with you. I'm glad you're calling in from London. We just had massive sweeps in Kensington, which is the poorest district in the state of Pennsylvania.
In Philadelphia.
In Philadelphia. It's like we call it Emerald City. And it's nothing like Emerald City in The Wizard of Oz. But in our country last year, more people died from the opiate crisis than from the Vietnam War. And yet we're not acting like this is a very serious crisis in this country. So we've been trying to demand a right for folks that have heroin addictions to be able to go in the hospital and to go through physical withdrawal in the hospital because the doctors, our former health commissioner, took a position. Doctors have flown in from around the country and said that it's actually dangerous to withdraw from heroin without being in a hospital and being observed. And still, like in your situation, people do not have a right to, you know, go into a hospital. And they also, in this country, don't have a right to the necessary mental health services that they need.
I understand. But, Sherry, there's a beautiful ending to my story.
That's great.
You know what happened? I went to a homeless shelter, and they, I had a kid, and I was going through court cases and all these issues and things like that. And you know what? They took all the headaches away from me and helped me to go through courts and all that. While I was in a homeless shelter, I went to college and got a degree. You know?
That's fantastic.
And it was only because of their help. They took all the burden off that I could progress in my life.
Well, and what you're here then to say, Juju, even though you're from a different country, is it does make a difference if you get help. People who are not on their feet can get on their feet. I know it sounds very basic. If you help them up, they can get on their feet.
No, but when I became homeless, I understood so much because I used to look down on people like that.
Uh-huh.
But I got so much knowledge that anyone can become homeless anytime. You know,
it opened your eyes. Color. Let me give out that number again. It's 866 Left Out, which is 866-533-8688. So, Juju, you met a lot of homeless people in London, and your personal testimony about what kind of people they were or are?
And not only that, I've become a member of the homeless society now
mm-hmm.
because I've got a degree and all these things. And what we do is every year we go around in my own county, we count all the homeless people. How many homeless people are in our county? And then what we do is we direct it to the town hall and embarrass the government and who is responsible for that.
Mm.
And you know what? We make it a front page news to our local newspapers.
Good. I hope it works. We know we have a hard time getting publicity here. What would you say is the attitude towards homelessness in Britain?
The thing is that people don't understand homelessness. And the thing is that we have to really punch it in to make people who are responsible at the higher rate who don't understand homelessness. And the way to do that is to invite them. And what we do is we invite some government officials to stand and beg in the street corner for all night and see how they feel.
I'd like to see Trump doing that. But I don't think it's going to happen, frankly.
That would be something else if he could make that. But we can make local officials to do that.
He could have a little sign on him says, you know, I need money to pay off women I've slept with.
There we go.
You don't see that one every day.
No, you don't. You know, I used to see guys injecting themselves with heroin, drugs, and all that. I used to look down on them. But, you know, there is a bigger picture behind that.
Mm.
Yep, everybody's got their backstory.
And you have to really understand that, how they became into that situation. Because of broken families, broken relationships, and all that. I've had guys with big businesses became homeless, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, same with on our march.
Sorry?
We've been on a march since June 2nd from Kensington to Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a guy that, you know, had a three-digit salary. And, you know, he had a little bit of a mental breakdown and one thing led to another. And then he became a part of the ranks of the homeless. And, you know, at first everybody was looking at him like, oh, you're just the white guy that's supporting the rest of us on this march. And the truth is that he's homeless right now. And you know, it's just a, you know, the thing that they say about everybody's a paycheck away or a healthcare crisis away from homelessness is really an indication of like what kind of government we have. Because in this country, it's certainly not a question of scarcity.
Back when I was delivering pizza and my base rate was $3.25 an hour, does that count as a three-digit income? Guess not, huh?
And you know something, right? Every time I in a homeless shelter when I was there, I woke up so early to get rid of all the guys who are going to argue and we're going to fight and all these things. But I know it's not their fault. And I used to go to college, and I didn't want to come to the homeless shelter early. I went to the library and I studied, you know.
You know, I just had, I work at UPS at night, Monday through Thursday nights, and we're on the verge of potentially going into the largest national strike in this country, but we make about $125 a week. And so one of the guys that I work with was staying in a homeless shelter, and he hurt himself on the job and didn't end up getting back to, you know, in by curfew hours, and lost his beautiful union job as a Teamster in a homeless shelter. So that's really an indication of the serious problems that we have in this country.
You are listening to the 20th Homelessness Marathon on the Pacifica Radio Network, coming to you from WPFW in Washington, D.C., where the call-in number for this broadcast is 866-LEFT-OUT, which is 866-533-8688. Juju, we're going to have to move along a little bit pretty soon now, but I do have that one question I still want to ask you, which is, all the people you've met who are homeless, however many, if that's 10, if that's 100, if that's 1,000, would you say, so that, because I'm trying to push this theme here because I really want people to get this, would you say these are all bad people? Would you say they're a mix of people? Would you say they're better people, worse people than people in houses? How would you say you're someone who looked down on homeless people? What should we think about that community now that you've been part of it?
I think that it's opened my eyes up, you know. And to open the eyes up of people who are responsible is the main thing that we should focus on.
Okay, well, Juju, I'm going to thank you very much.
Through experience, I'm talking about it.
Uh-huh.
How it opened my eyes and I became part of that community. And I'm so happy that I'm not a wealthy man, but I give to homeless a lot now, my time and some funds that I save up every year just for homeless, to reflect where I'm coming from, you know, to help that community out, you know.
Great. Well, good for you. Good for you for getting out of homelessness. Good for you for being someone who is still committed. Actually, every homeless advocate I know was homeless at one time or another, and you don't forget it. So good for you, Juju. We got to move on, but I really want to thank you very much for participating and for calling in all the way from London. And good luck to you. Thank you. We have now on the line, again, the number to call in is 866-LEFT-OUT, which is 866-533-8688. Mike from Portland, Maine, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Yes, thank you. Hello.
Hello.
You're on the air with Sherry Honkala of the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign, as well as with myself. What's on your mind?
Wonderful. Thank you so much for having this. I'm listening to you through WMPG in Portland, Maine. And I'd like to thank Jeff Lockhart there, who is coordinating the day-long broadcast of this in the Portland, Maine area. So thank you.
Somewhere in this hour, we're going to actually have a report from Portland, Maine, if it's racked up and ready to go at some point. But anyway, go ahead. Go ahead.
Excellent. Great. Yeah, I just want to call in and say thank you. A few years ago, I had a radio program in Austin, Texas, with the title of Voice of Homeless America.
Oh, good for you.
Yeah, it was, that's a play on Voice of America, which, of course, seek to, you know, promote the American way and capitalism around the world. So I thought it would be good to have a take from Voice of Homeless America. And in that program, my basic deduction on the whole problem is that we need more housing, affordable housing, and training for people who are homeless. And I hope that there are training programs being developed out there so people can, you know, get jobs and feel a sense of dignity about their lives and get on with their lives.
Well, great. Well, thank you so much for calling in, and I hope you'll be listening and enjoying the rest of the program.
Sure will. Thanks.
Thank you.
Good work.
Thank you very much. We have on the line also Catherine from Maryland. Catherine, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Yes, thank you so much. I, too, was once homeless before, and so I pretty much advocate for people who are homeless, and homelessness does not discriminate whether you're rich or poor. People in the United States of America have situations such as out of control, you know, rent control, you know, and so affordable housing has been a great help to a lot of people because, like I said, I was once homeless, too.
Well, Ben Carson's getting ready to cut 200,000 units, Section 8 units.
And they want to raise the cost of staying in subsidized housing.
Yeah, well, supposedly 2 days ago he's saying that they're not going to go forward with that.
They shouldn't go forward because you have people who have mental illnesses and all, so they need to analyze the situation completely. They don't have a problem with being homeless right now.
Yeah, well, definitely.
Trump doesn't have a problem, neither does Ben Carson.
Yeah.
And so you have people who have families, people who have mental health issues, and so America needs to step back and take a look at that. You know, it's just so unfortunately in the United States of America, if you ask me, no one should be homeless.
That's right. There's more, you know, luxury units and abandoned properties than there are homeless people. And there's certainly not the political will to put an end to homelessness in this country. Otherwise, we wouldn't even have it.
Sherry, we have a lot of people, such as Catherine on the line. What would you tell people? Because people are kind of atomized and not united. What do people who are concerned about this issue, what would you advise them to do?
I would
advise them to help out if possible. I was reading an article regarding Seattle, Washington, where they have a highness of homelessness. And so we all have to, you know, be a part of this, you know, because like the saying goes, you could be a paycheck away from being homeless.
That's right. And we better, you know, start knitting this thing together.
Yes.
And building, you know, this beautiful quilt and developing the kind of organization in order to, you know, take back our country from these corporations. Because,
because otherwise,
all of us are going to be at the bottom of this sinking Titanic. And it's just, you know, one day it's one group of folks and then it's another. So we need to get organized and get the hell off the Titanic. And
right,
that means getting organized.
You don't think it's romantic with Leonardo DiCaprio and Kate Winslet or whatever her name was, you know? I mean, you don't want to be on that Titanic. It looked so good.
Man, there's nothing.
She had a mental illness, you know? And, you know, it's just so unfortunate that she had a mental illness that could have been prevented. Help to prevent her life. You know what I'm saying?
Who are we talking about now?
Well, I thought you were talking about Kate Spade and Anthony.
No, Kate Spade, somebody else. But yes, it just goes. Of course, we all know money doesn't buy happiness. But let me tell you, poverty will buy misery.
That's right.
Yes.
There's nothing. I know that you probably know that there's nothing romantic about being poor. Certainly, when we were sleeping out in the park in the pouring down rain. And,
like I
we're
said,
soaking
it
wet.
It doesn't discriminate.
That's right.
Catherine, let me thank you so much for the call. We got to move along, but thank you very much for your contribution to the Homelessness Marathon. That number to call in here, folks, is 866-LEFT-OUT, which is 866-533-8688. We have a little pre-recorded piece here we're going to play from our intrepid reporter, Ginny DeRoche. On homelessness in Portland, Maine, a little overview. So let's see if we can take it away to Portland, Maine. Here.
My name is Jenny DeRoche, and I want to thank you for taking the time to answer some questions for us about the very important topic of homelessness. Could I get your name and title and a little bit about what you do at Preble Street?
My name is Thomas Potosik. I am veteran outreach at Preble Street. I work with the Veteran Housing Services Program. And so I just, where a lot of the work I do is connecting with veterans after the program has housed them, and they still need a little help making that transition and making that work. And so I'll connect with them then. I also do some connection with, you know, active clients and you know, doing intakes and stuff like that. I'm kind of a jack of all trades there with Veteran Housing Services.
So the first question I have for you is how you feel the problem of homelessness has increased or decreased in the last year and a half.
So as the numbers from the Emergency Shelter Assessment Committee will show, really homelessness has increased. That increase is largely with families. The numbers for adults this April compared to April of 2017 are roughly the same, a little bit higher, but the big increase is with families. You can see they show intakes, and for April, you know, including so this is just Oxford Street Shelter intakes. You know, there were 145 intakes in April, so you know you have to house 145 people in April just to tread water, you know. So I mean, it's definitely still a significant problem.
Well, that kind of leads into my second question, which actually I know somebody who works on the West End in Portland, and she is next to a building that has a dumpster, and there's been a lot of problems with homeless people sleeping in or near the dumpster, and so they're trying to work with the city officials and putting up signs that say, do not sleep in the dumpster or else you're going to get crushed. Is that something that you hear about a lot, and you know, what other kinds of things like that are going on in the city?
So obviously, yeah, you know, I mean, especially something like, you know, sleeping in a dumpster is incredibly unsafe. And, you know, we have outreach people. The program has been scaled back a little. There used to be a CLIP program, a clinical intervention program, that had several staff that's all they did is go out every day, you know, pretty much all day, and connect with people who are like camping out or, you know, really on the street, who aren't coming into Preble Street to get, you know, services or stuff they may need. You know, but we still have people doing as much outreach as possible. And you know, at Preble Street, if we hear of people sleeping in a dumpster, we will connect with them because that is incredibly unsafe. There are lots of reasons people, you know, camp out or sleep on the street and don't go to the shelter. The shelter can be an incredibly overwhelming place. And you know, a lot of people just their mental health doesn't afford them the ability to be in a space like that with that many people around them. You know, so they sleep wherever they can.
We've also heard that people in other cities give bus tickets to homeless people to get them out of their cities and bring them to other cities that may have better benefits. And so it seems that maybe that's why there's more homeless people in one particular city. And is that really the case?
That is something that major cities all over the country say. They all say that people are coming from everywhere else to their city. And obviously, like, so you know, Portland is, you know, the biggest city for, you know, hundreds of miles in any direction. you know, that's that Portland is where people are going to go. I can't speak for other places, but I know, you know, the way Oxford Street Shelter has always done it. They don't have the finances to give bus tickets like maybe they used to, you know, but what they always did, you know, if you said, oh, hey, man, I just need to get back to, you know, Mobile, Alabama. That's where I'm from. That's where my family is. I just need to be back there. You know, they would make sure through, you know, phone calls that there is someone on the receiving end, you know, that someone say, oh, yeah. He can come down and we're going to put him up. And, you know, because we're not going to just ship someone to be homeless somewhere else. You know, now I can't speak for other places, but it's also, I think, a little unrealistic that's going on. You know, it costs money. Shelters don't have money to be buying bus tickets for people. Again, it's not just Portland where people feel that way. It's not what people aren't, you know, choosing to come to Portland, Maine.
So I guess the last thing I just wanted to ask, we're meeting in this nice new housing development for people who are homeless, and so I wanted to ask you what you thought was the most important thing that's happened in Portland in the last year and a half, the one thing that's made the biggest difference, and also what you want people to take away from this interview and what's important to you.
I really, you know, and the reason we're here is because I would certainly have to put the opening of Houston Commons at or near the top of any list of, you know, really great things that have happened in the past year and a half. And, you know, we have a mayor in Portland who would love to see, you know, five more, you know, Logan Places in Houston Commons. So I think that kind of commitment to housing first, I think is a really great thing for the city of Portland, especially, you know, with the gentrification that's going on and all the buildings being sold and then revamped, and then now they're, you know, $300-$400 more a month than they were. And, you know, we're running out of places. We're running out of places that I can live, let alone someone, you know, on a fixed income who maybe has a voucher that has a limit of how high it can go. I think, you know, what I always want people to understand whenever I speak about homelessness, you know, is that it really, really is something that can happen to anyone. Depending on what kind of access you have to services, that's going to dictate whether you're homeless in some way that never gets counted, you know, like you stay with a friend or you go move back in with your parents or something for, you know, 3-4 months or whatever, and then you get back on your feet and you're moving forward again. You know, but if you don't have that kind of support system, and if you, and in the realm of addiction, you know, if you don't have insurance, you know, that's when the issue becomes one of homelessness. You know, there are far more people out there who suffer from addiction issues or mental health issues who are not homeless than who are. And the only difference is, you know, access to services, you know, and poverty, basically.
All right. Well, thank you very much for doing all the important work that you're doing and giving back. And I appreciate your time and talking with me. This is Jenny DeRoche reporting for the Homelessness Marathon.
Hi, folks. We're back live on the Homelessness Marathon, and I'm sitting here with Sherry Honkola, the co-chair of the Poor People's Economic Human Rights
Campaign.
Campaign. Why am I blank? I'm getting old, Sherry. What can I tell you? Listen, we got a caller I'm going to want to take, but I first want to ask you a question, because in that segment, they mentioned about, you know, giving people bus tickets out of town, and once in a while that's a good thing if you're really going to somebody who wants you. But for most people, it's kind of a bogus solution. Are you seeing a lot of bogus solutions to homelessness out there?
Yep, it's all around us, and I think it's the number one thing that we're dealing with besides the orange man. I think the orange man is easy to identify, but the nonprofit industrial complex and, you know, the hidden corporations that are getting away with, you know, building big developments, getting tax write-offs, those kinds of things, the gentrification in our neighborhoods, the theft of the land. This thing is really out of control. For the first time, I never thought I would say this out loud. They're building luxury units in Kensington. And so,
which is your neighborhood.
That's right. One of the biggest opiate crises. That's why they started talking about it. Mm-hmm. Before then, it didn't matter if they died, but now because they need the land for luxury units, now they have to talk about it. So, you know, guys that, you know, live on the corner, one of the guys that's with us, he's just a mechanic. He's homeless. And at the march, I have to try to figure out where he's going to live. But Pablo was just standing there fixing cars, not involved in the drug game, nothing like that. And it's just a regular thing to, you know, sweep people that don't have a place to live. So it's going to be the end of this march that we've been on to uplift the 50th anniversary of Dr. King and the Poor People's March and Resurrection City. And now, so the answer is that they're bussing people all over the place. It's like taking homeless people and using us like basketballs and, you know, throw us from city to city and tell them that, you know, now hot potato, they're your problem. So it's bad news, and there's a lot of there's a lot of gross profits that different organizations are making off the backs of people.
Those numbers to call in again here, or that number to call in again, is 866 left out, which is 866-533-8688. On the phone, we have, it says here, Maxie Stiles from Washington, D.C. Maxie, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Hi, thank you so much for welcoming me.
Our pleasure. What's on your mind?
Listen, one of my friends named Jeanette. I am homeless, and she told me to call this number. And she told me she was on the radio, and she heard you guys, and she told me to call immediately.
Oh, great. Well, now you're here. You're connected to us. What would you like to say?
I would like to say anything that you can do to help anyone who is homeless, like me.
Yes.
I would love to hear about it.
Well, tell us what your situation. How did you become homeless? Where are you? What's your situation? You're here with Sherry Honkel. She's a great expert on these matters. Not that anybody has a magic wand they can wave. So tell us your story.
Absolutely. Hello, Sherry.
Hi. How are you? I'm tired.
I'm fine. I'm tired as well, love.
Go for it. I'd love to hear your story.
Absolutely. I was in Washington, D.C., and I was invited to someone's home, and she liked me so much after dinner, and I explained to her my situation that my previous roommate had put me out. He lived in Clinton, Maryland. So I was in Washington, D.C., the Noma area, invited for dinner, and she told me to stay that night, and then that night turned into another night, and the next thing you know, I was with her for 6 months. She died last month, and she was only 32 years of age. She had sugar diabetes really badly, and she loved for people to be around her. And ever since I had come, I didn't realize that I became such a good friend to her in such a short amount of time. I mean, it just was unmatched. I didn't know how much I meant to her, because she meant all the world to me, letting me stay there, you know, and trying to get on my feet. And every attempt that I tried to get out here and get a job, I was denied because I had to get a few things from Mr. Trump to sign on for, like, I'm a dual citizen, by the way. I'm from London, England. And I'm a dual citizen, but I was denied my social security privileges or anything like that to get a job. So I had to fight for things that I paid for already to come here.
Wow, that's horrible.
He screwed up things so much. And he makes it seem like everybody's from a third world country, but we're not. our people are you people.
Give it time, I mean, and you will be a third world country. Don't be so sure about that.
Well, I hope that he doesn't reverse those proverbial rules.
Right.
I mean, I really don't, because we are supposed to be allies, and that is why I come here.
Where are you sleeping at night now, Maxie?
I'm not actually sleeping anywhere but on the street at now, because...
So that means you're not really sleeping.
No, ma'am. I'm exhausted right
one
now.
One eye open.
Yes, I'm in the Whole Foods right now, and I'm praying that I don't dart out sleep, because I keep closing one eye, but the waitress is very cognizant. She knows that I'm homeless. So she's here at the Whole Foods looking, and I'm just sitting at the bar here talking to you two and charging me telly. Because I need to make sure that I have adequate battery life.
Sherry, can Max just meet up with your people? You're in D.C. too.
Absolutely.
How would he find you?
If you go to St. Stephen's Church at 16 Newton Street, okay. You know, 16th and Newton, even if you got to walk. Panhandle, some bus fare, whatever. We can sit down this evening and figure out what we can do about your situation. And do you got a pen on you?
I don't have a pen, but I do have a telly.
Okay, put it in your telly. 215.
Okay, hold on, please.
Oh, we don't got a lot of time here.
Well, while we're waiting, I'll mention that we're in a real radio studio here. We're often on the street, and they've got this really nice thing here, a button that says press to cough, but I haven't pushed it because I don't want to cough.
Okay, I'm trying to switch it over to speaker.
Okay, you ready? You with us?
You still with me?
Okay.
Okay, let's wrap this up.
Okay, so...
Okay.
It's 215-869.
Okay, that'll be
215-869.
Yes, ma'am.
4753.
And you're going to be at St. Stephen's Church?
Can you repeat that just for me? Really?
Okay.
215-869-4753. We'll be at St. Stephen's Church tonight. If you come by around 5:30, we can have a conversation about what we can do about your situation. We don't own real estate. We don't have bags of money. We don't have a money tree. But we sure have a very important thing, which is a lot of social capital. And when you're homeless, one of the most important things that you need to start building is a social capital and being connected to other poor and homeless people.
Okay.
I hope that'll help you, and I hope that you'll be able to link up. And in the meantime, Maxis, thank you very much for the call, and best of luck to you in getting out of homelessness and getting into a better situation.
Listen, sir.
Again, that number to call in here is 866-LEFT-OUT, which is 866-533-8688. Sherry, would you like to talk to us about some of the things you're doing in terms of organizing, some of the goals that you have, some of the things that you think people around the country might want to emulate or fight for?
Yeah, the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign, not to throw any shade, but just to differentiate ourselves, we are not the Poor People's Campaign, the new Poor People's Campaign. The difference between us is that we refuse to take any money from any corporations, and we don't take money from any Democrats or Republicans. We think that poor and homeless people need to be in the leadership of their own movement to end poverty, hunger, and homelessness in this country. And so we just, you know, we realized now with net neutrality, with losing that battle, and there being less and less you know, so-called progressive media talking about the real issues that are happening in this country, we are really in trouble. So we had to, you know, walk, do it the old school way, knock on doors, let people see your face, get a bullhorn, you know, start doing the soapbox thing, hit the corner, bad together with other people that are sleeping in a park. And we're real serious about building, getting away from the nonprofit industrial complex and building building a poor people's liberation army if need be. Because people are not surviving it. I want people to understand loud and clear. More people died this last year due to the opiate crisis. People decided to give up. They're living out on the street and they're dying. And we need the same kind, if not more, of a response that people had to the Vietnam War. People matter. People are dying. And so please get involved. Our website is economichumanrights.org. Again, that's economichumanrights.org. We've got constant different educationals. We teach people how to band together and set up homeless encampments, try to teach people what their rights are, teach people how to take over abandoned government-owned properties, churches, you name it. But we just want a decent life and dignity like anybody else, like the man in orange. He lives in good housing, and we deserve to live in good housing as well.
Now, of course, Sherry, you're a politician. I mean, you were the vice presidential candidate for the Green Party in 2012. And I mean, I'm not holding it against you. I ran for Congress in 2004.
I won't hold that against you.
Thank you very much. I didn't win either, you know, so...
Darn.
What can I tell you? That's how I feel about you. But you ran on a platform. You had a platform. What was your platform as far as homelessness? I'm sure it's different than Trump's.
Yeah, it was very different. We said that, you know, we would take all the unemployment centers and turn them into employment centers. And overnight, you know, every time I've ran for office, whether it was when I ran for sheriff, when I ran for vice president, and most recently when I ran for state representative, I committed to, you know, the very first day, if I was elected, to get a bunch of vans together, drive around, and let's pick homeless people up. You know, I don't buy this, crap that there's nothing that can be done. There's massive amounts of luxury churches. And talk about social capital. If you run a city, you've got tons of social capital. There's no reason for anybody to be out in the pouring rain like they were the other night. And people getting sick and infections and sleeping with rats and cockroaches and not knowing where they can go to the bathroom. And here on the National Mall, every single thousands of porta potties, and each one is locked. You know, this is absolutely ridiculous. You know, we would take all those locks off. We would put people into those churches. We would put them into those boarded up, abandoned luxury units or abandoned HUD properties, or, you know, that are across this entire country.
That number again to call in here is 866-LEFT-OUT, which is 866-533-8688. On the line here at the Homelessness Marathon. Oh, wait, I'm told no. Somebody's waving that we don't have the caller on the line who it says here we have on the line. Okay, what do I know? I just work here, folks. What can I tell you? So when you were out there, I have to say, Sherry, my own, speaking as a fellow politician,
yes.
I would, if I would talk to a crowd and I would talk to them about these issues, I always found people responsive. I often felt like we are told we're a different kind of people than we actually are. I mean, I didn't find that people didn't understand these things, or they would say, well, what's your beef? Everybody's doing fine. I usually found it just the opposite. I'd have people who were of other parties or whatever coming up to me and saying things like, you know, well, my sister's got cancer and she, what do I do? She has no health insurance. This was before pre-existing conditions were covered. I find that people really do understand this outside of the leadership, that is, of the country.
Absolutely. And that's what kind of makes us different than whatever a politician is, right? Because, you know...
Well, speak for yourself. I'm still waiting to be paid off by a lobbyist, Sherry.
Man.
You're a better person than I am. I'm just waiting for somebody to offer me something.
I've been offered a lot of big things these days. But, you know, I have to go to sleep at night, and I wouldn't be able to live with myself. And, you know, every single day, I'm looking for one day when somebody doesn't say, Can I sleep in your back room? Can I sleep on your floor? Do you know somebody's house that I can go to? Whatever. So we've started this new underground railroad. We've always had the underground railroad, but now it's like a bed and breakfast, right? Where people can go online, they can sign up to allow their back room or their shed or their barn or whatever and share their space. We know that that's not the answer, but it's something to do.
I should mention before we take our next call here that even though, you know, when we're talking about all the political races we lost, but Sherry here actually might have won her last one if there hadn't been massive voter fraud by the Democratic Party that I think is going to result in a couple of people going to jail or something like that. I don't know the whole story, but, you know, it isn't just that you can't win with this message. It's that the powers that be will line up against you to make sure you don't win. Anyway, that number to call in is 866-LEFT-OUT, 866-533-8688, and we have Gregory from Baltimore on the line. Gregory, welcome to the Homelessness Marathon.
Yes, sir. How you doing?
Good. And you're here with Sherry Honkola, too.
Hi. Good to have you on.
How you doing, sister? Thank you for your service.
Thank you.
This homeless act from Baltimore. Because one person homeless, we all homeless.
That's right.
Believe me. Now, I work with homeless veterans.
Mm-hmm.
Lord have mercy. Now, but I'm going to take you back to the Obama administration.
Right.
We had money for a healthy vet. We had money to get for mental health thing. We had money for the vets to do what they do, right?
Right.
And so he took the money because he said that he was going to build houses for all. He was going to take all the homeless vets off the street and put them in housing. Did it happen?
No.
No. And I was at the whole time he was in the White House, I was at his throat.
Yep.
Because he lied to veterans. Now, we got Nazi 45 in there now. What you think he going to do?
Continue to lie. I definitely know yesterday when I was at Housing and Urban Development, they were full-time worried about a public relations problem. They tried to take me in the back to have me arrested so that there would be no cameras. And, you know, it's a sad day when you can walk all the way from Philadelphia to Washington, D.C., and they can't even appease you by taking two or three people to a private room and making you feel like at least they'll listen to your issues. And we had some homeless vets with us as well. And, you know, they don't give a damn anymore. And so we have to really understand that. Let's not waste our time anymore. As homeless vets and homeless people in this country, we have to get organized to raise the consciousness of the people around us and really begin to do the tracing of numbers and finding out who's really benefiting off of our homeless and our poverty and our misery, and take serious this effort to take our country back.
Gregory, I want to thank you for one thing, because you said to Sherry, thank you for your service. And I know you work with vets, and we all want to see vets taken care of. We want to see everybody taken care of, course. I consider it part of the militarism of our society, though, that the only people we ever thank for what they do is people in the military. There are teachers. There are caregivers. There are doctors. There are advocates. There are people in countless walks of life who perform a service for this country. And I think it's a good thing to recognize them as people who have a service for this country and not just people who are in the military, even though we honor them too.
It's because they have families. And they all do exactly what you say they do.
That's
even
right.
Even though they served in the military, their families serve us.
Mm-hmm.
And when they go crazy, and they're out in the street, and they leave them homeless. They leave them and don't take care of them. They don't take care of the kids.
Right.
They don't take care of the wife. And let me say one thing about me fighting for the vets' wives. The veterans get 100%, right? And they get a check every month. But
right.
When that vet dies, that caregiver who's the wife and the children, the grandchildren, everything, they don't give them anything.
Yeah. So
they leave them hanging. It's something wrong with that picture.
That's right. That's right. We've had an amazing man who's a former Marine that has been, you know, led us pretty much the entire way from Philadelphia to Washington, D.C. And we have to really figure out how to, you know, learn from some of our homeless veterans about organization, discipline, service, and use those skills so that we can get organized, like I said earlier, and really take back the basic necessities of life. And that begins with housing. And it begins with housing homeless vets, children, elderly, and beginning to have a cooperative society.
Gregory, a point that, you know, also when we talk about vets, a point to touch on is a huge percentage of the people who are on the streets were under the care or aegis of the government in one way. And it's not just vets. It's former foster kids. It's people who've been in programs. It's that got canceled. It's people who've been had scholarships even or whatever they were at school. And then that ran out. The government only takes responsibility for what it takes responsibility for. But wouldn't we, you know, if it was a parent and every child you brought up wound up in jail or on the streets, you'd say, well, was that a good parent? You know, might be circumstances. But when the government helps people, they all wind up on the street and we don't even call them out on it.
That's right.
One more thing, brother, and I appreciate you. Do you know Nazi 45 spent $12 million in Singapore?
Nope, didn't know that.
$12 million in Singapore. Doing what? Eating McDonald's hamburgers?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I guess it was his security and his airfare.
But $12 million. Do you know what y'all could do with $12 million?
I know what I could do with a half a million.
That's all I'm saying.
I know I could do with 20,000.
If y'all two got your hands on $12 million, what would you do?
Well, you mean after I had bought the yacht, the private plane, the pilot, the jet, diamonds for my wife, and all of that stuff?
I can hear it in your voice. Your nature is too great. You would not, you know what? You would not spend a dime on yourself until you got everybody else straight.
No, I tell you, I would spend a dime, but I wouldn't do any of that stuff.
Exactly.
I don't even understand how people live with it, frankly.
Yes, sir. Live with yourself.
How do you live with yourself when you're walking, stepping over people who are dying, and you've got way more than you need?
$12 million.
It's so gross. It's so criminal.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, sir. God bless y'all, and thank you for your
God
service.
Bless you,
thank
too.
You, Gregory. Peace. Thank you very much. So we're almost out of time for this hour, but let's just wrap up here, Sherry. We got a couple of minutes. And what do you see as the future of poor people's organizing here in the United States?
Well, you'll definitely see the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign on the front lines. We're talking very seriously about looking at other models and other parts of the world and really getting serious about organizing a poor people's liberation army.
You're talking nonviolent army, right?
Yes, we're talking about a nonviolent army, but having people freeze to death, die from the opiate crisis, be shot and smacked in the head while you're homeless on the streets of this country, we're not dealing with it anymore. Something different has to happen. The numbers are too huge. And so if people are interested, they should definitely go to our website at economichumanrights.org and enlist.
Do you think it's going to have to get worse before it gets better? Are we going to have massive unemployment? Not that it's as great as they think it is now, but are we going to have a depression or something before we have a real organizing push in this country?
Nah, I think we already have it. But I think what we have is we have the so-called liberals and the nonprofit industrial complex that is keeping the truth away from the people and participating in our demise. And we need like this that, put a light on the truth about what's happening in this country.
What do you mean programs like this? How many programs like this are there?
There are none.
Oh, please. Just like there's not so many like you, Sherry, but, you know.
I know. It's just criminal the amount of money that's going into progressive social media these days, or into suppressing the voice of authentic, real people that are really dealing with real issues of homelessness and poverty. they dress it up, and we're not going to dress it up. We're going to lift it up.
Well, very good. I'm not quite exactly sure. I think we've got like no time, so we're going to take a quick break. Thank you, Sherry Honkala from the Poor People's Economic Human Rights Campaign, and we'll be back quickly.
Really thank you, Jeremy.
You're listening to the Homelessness Marathon, originating from WPFW in Washington, D.C. The opinions expressed on this broadcast are not necessarily those of the participating organizations or the originating and affiliated radio stations.